Was Woodstock a celebration of idealism or a turning point contributing to America's cultural decline? That's our question for this particular portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Scott Powell, a thoughtful writer with the Discovery Institute. He wrote an article recently on Woodstock 50 years later, providing an eyewitness account. Scott, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely, Jerry.
I didn't realize you had been at Woodstock, and this, of course, is the 50th anniversary around this time. It happened 50 years ago, and so tell us about it.
50 years ago last weekend.
Okay.
Well, I was 18 years old at the time, and, you know, I enjoyed the music. It was an idealistic environment, and I was immature in terms of, establishing my own philosophy. I was raised in a Christian family and never abandoned those values. But it's interesting to note that really the idealism that you're talking about, Jerry, that preceded Woodstock, that really existed right into the 60s, was very different than the idealism that came out of it, because the idealism that our country was rooted in, was shaped by a heritage, a Judeo-Christian paradigm of idealism, rooted in the country's founding and then reinforced through struggles, warfare, the Greatest Generation. And I think most Americans felt that, America was, our calling was to be a prosperous and virtuous society like a city on a hill. And that all changed.
Yeah. And Woodstock, I think, helped change it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it was, for those not familiar with it, well, of course, it was 3 days of rock and roll and mud, and there were 400,000 participants. It was basically one man who owned a farm or something in upstate New York, not too far from New York City, and he opened his home for this big festival. They ended up having 32, as you describe it, 32 of the most iconic artists in American music history. And but you even make a note, interesting note here. You said that Woodstock basically would not be possible today, quote, given our current levels of division, intolerance, and uncivility. And by the way, some of the people who clamor the most for tolerance are honestly the most intolerant people around if you disagree with them. They won't even allow you the ability to disagree. If you don't agree, they want to shut you down or punish you or whatever.
That's right. We're probably experiencing one of the greatest challenges to our First Amendment that we've had as a nation, maybe since the Civil War. So hope springs eternal, and I think through difficulties, many in America are kind of waking up to the fact that our problems cannot be solved by politics, certainly not politics alone, and certainly not more and more laws and regulations, but we really have to focus on getting back to the idealism based on the individual and the moral character of the individual, which, of course, liberalism really downplays tremendously or even denies. Their focus is on creating institutions and utilizing regulations and laws to bring about what they deem to be appropriate behavior, when actually, if we had good people, if we had more good people in America, we would need fewer laws and fewer regulations.
Yeah. Huh. That's very interesting. Tell us about your own personal experiences. And by the way, I have to say this. The Vietnam War was a major important aspect of the backdrop of Woodstock, the Vietnam War. And weren't a lot of the, songs related to, hey, hey, ho, ho, we won't go, or, whatever, that kind of stuff?
I don't remember any of those songs in particular.
Oh.
They did exist.
Okay.
There's no doubt about it. And look, the Vietnam War was very controversial. It was probably, we never should have engaged ourselves there without a clear mission.
Right.
And a clear plan to win.
And a declaration of end of war. There was never
right.
an official declaration
That's
of war,
right.
as I understand it.
That's right. We sort of incrementally got involved
right.
without the declaration, and we didn't have a clear plan that spanned several presidencies, which is always problematic, right?
Yeah.
It really started under the Kennedy administration, and then LBJ, who became president after the assassination of JFK, took over, and that's when things really degenerated. And you had bad reporting. You had Robert McNamara not giving clear information about what was really happening in the war. And then you had an adverse media. And I would mark those days. The Vietnam War was probably the turning point in the media in America, the media turning against being very politicized and embracing oftentimes the views of the adversary, because the adversaries did manipulate our media. And that departure from pursuing the truth has been with us ever since.
You know, it's interesting. I was just thinking about Walter Cronkite, and I remember even as a kid seeing Walter Cronkite responding to the whole idea that man had just landed on the moon and was walking around the moon, and, you know, he takes off his glasses and, you know, phew, what an incredible milestone in history. Today, you know, if President Trump had achieved something like that, you know, the newscasters of today would say, you know, well, believe it or not, the forces of Trump are starting to pollute the moon by walking around on it, you know, with dirty feet, you know, whatever, dirty boots. I mean, it's like Trump can't win no matter what happens.
Well, it's very sad. I think that, in all honesty, we become so divided as a country that any Republican would face the kind of hostility that Trump is facing. Trump's response doesn't always bring about the best result necessarily, but his policies have really delivered very substantive and good changes.
Good judges.
But he is who he is. We elected him knowing really who he was, because he's very transparent, and no one's perfect, right? We know that. No politician is perfect. Trump has his flaws, but his policies have, on balance, been quite good and successful.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I wrote a column when he started to become the popular nominee, or, you know, it looked like he was moving towards becoming the nominee, and of course he did, but this was in the early spring of 2016. And my column that was Rhett Butler for president? ? And really, I kind of likened him, but Rhett Butler, you know, from Gone with the Wind, was a rake, but he was a likable rake, and he got things done. And when push came to shove, he was the one that was there, reliable. But he wasn't necessarily, you know, as somebody once put it, you know, we're not voting for a bishop, we're voting for a president. And so there's some points there. How about on just a little bit of personal reflection in terms of Woodstock itself? What was it like? How did you eat? Where did you sleep? What was the environment like?
Well, sleeping, I was with a friend, and we were, a high school buddy of mine went over together, and we found very good seats sort of in the middle of the stage, you know, I don't know how many rows back. There weren't rows. We were sitting on the, you know, an amphitheater-like field. And we didn't want to lose our place. So one of us tended to always stay there, and the other one would wander off. They had volunteer food, a lot of brown rice. So food was never a problem. They did have, outhouses. But in terms of sleeping, you know, it was really catnapping, and it was just a very unusual event that there was a lot of lightheartedness and I'd say just positive vibes, really, at that particular concert. You know, what came after, the deluge came after, but the concert itself and the attitudes that people had were, you know, we're very upbeat. It was quite a unique event that will probably never happen again.
Wow. Now, when would they actually have the concerts? If they had 32 bands over a period of 3 days and nights or whatever, Were there times that they would stop, like at 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock or midnight, or did they just keep going?
I think they kind of stopped the music after midnight.
Each night.
Into the wee hours.
Yeah.
And then it would start again in the morning. You know, there were complaints that it took a long time between the musicians, you know, to set up. But I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I just remember enjoying the music and having nice neighbors around us.
Huh. So you got
people,
so
would,
it
you
was
know,
a
watch out for your things, you know?
Yeah, it was a positive experience then overall.
It was. Yes, it was.
It wasn't like one of those concerts where there was one of them where they were, I guess the Rolling Stones were having the song Sympathy for the Devil or something like that. And while they were performing that, there was some sort of act of violence or something in the crowd. But I think that was in California at one of these outdoor concerts, if you know what I'm talking about. But
yes, yeah, there were, you know, Watson's Glen, I think, had problems the year after that. But it's, you know, the culture in America has changed so dramatically since the 60s and the Woodstock generation. And I think the, you know, the departure of appreciating the Judeo-Christian ideals,
yeah,
that really are the basis of almost all the progress we've made as a nation. I mean, you think back, you know, our biggest issue was slavery, right? Well, who led, you know, who led the charge against slavery? It was the Christian community that did.
Absolutely.
And, you know, then, of course, we had
can I stop
child
you right there?
Labor and
women's
rights. And again, it was Christians who led that.
And let me stop you right there real fast on this, the Christians leading the anti-slavery charge. One lady who's gotten short shrift in our discussion today created the book Uncle Tom's Cabin. And Uncle Tom became such a low, you know, icon, such a, you know, a put down and so forth, that the book itself is not given the credit for what it did. I mean, that book helped electrify and wake up the conscience of so many millions of Americans, including people in the North, including some in the South, you know, against the evils of slavery. So it played an important role, and it's a very Christian book. Uncle Tom himself is a very devout Methodist, and she doesn't get any credit these days, Harriet Beecher Stowe, and she ought to, because it was one of those, you know, moments. It's sort of like Rosa Parks, you know, was very critical in the whole civil rights movement in the 50s.
Right, right. Well, of course, Martin Luther King, was the leader. He was a Christian man, a flawed individual, but God has used flawed individuals throughout his history, and I think Martin Luther King is a good example of a flawed man being used to finally realize the Declaration of Independence.
Now, one thing about it, Woodstock, when you left, was it a bit of a mess? Because that's one thing I've heard.
I don't remember, to tell you the truth.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure that it was,
yeah,
but I don't think it would be quite as messy as such an event would be today.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got a kick out of this. In 1990, we went to this huge, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people, pro-life rally in Washington, D.C. in the mall. And I'll never forget this. Everybody picked up after themselves. And a park policeman told me, wow, this is amazing. A week before was the Earth Day celebration, and we had to pick up after all those people, you know, with all their litter. And here you people, the pro-life people, that's not your cause, the Earth. You pick up after yourselves, you know. So it was a very interesting contrast. We have 20 seconds left, Scott, for any concluding thought on Woodstock.
Well, the most important thing is a refocusing on the need for spiritual
Amen.
Revival in America. And that can come in so many different forms. You know, Christ, first and foremost, was the friend of non-believers. He was, you know, he befriended non-religious people, and he touched their hearts. He showed them forgiveness and love. And I think that's what we're called to do as individuals. So the spiritual revival that we need in this country isn't necessarily going to just be housed behind church walls. It should be happening in neighborhoods, and that is very individualized and very different in different locations. Mm-hmm. But think if all the, you know, the many tens of millions of Christians could touch the lives of people, we could transform this country.
Scott Powell, discovery.org, for more information. Thanks, Scott, for being with us.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate it.